Brooklyn's in a blackout, blackout, and you still find a way. What's up, guys? My name's Joshua Clifton. Welcome to the Youngblood Podcast Hive Hybrid. For those of you that don't know, I used to have a podcast called the Youngblood Podcast, and I think I'm going to revive that. But any interview I do will probably be on both the Hive and the Youngblood Podcast feed. This is a podcast where I interview bands, musicians, comedians, authors, just creative folks that I find interesting, and we talk about becoming the artist that inspires us today, and we talk about the art that inspired them. So whether it's music or movies, but usually gears towards like maybe a soundtrack of their growth. And this podcast was a live podcast that I did at Audio Feed Festival 2019. Audio Feed is a festival that's in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, and it's usually done at the first week of July. And if you haven't checked it out, you should go check that out. Pretty easy to find. Just Google Audio Feed. And I got lucky enough to interview my new friends, Tooth & Nail artist, Hearts Like Lions. So be sure to stick around at the end there, and I'll give you the links to go and check out their music. Also, check out all the show notes. All the music that's played on this podcast is in the show notes. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Hearts Like Lions.
guys. Welcome to, I don't even know what to call this, but it's Heartsuck Lions. Give them a round of applause. They're playing at 5:15. Right, 3:15. 5:15. But get there at 3:15. It's going to be that good. We're going to talk about. My name is Josh Clifton. I'm in the band Raven Hill, and I run the Honey Gold Records. And I've been doing podcasting for some time, and I love talking to people. I especially like talking to people like me that have decided to make the sometimes ill-advised choice, most of the time, of doing music. Somewhat for a living. So it had to have been something that made us make that decision, and it was usually other art. So whenever me and my friends would get together for a drink or coffee or something like that, we ended up talking about our favorite records, and maybe it was our mom singing what was that song? It was by Lynn Anderson. It's like, I beg your pardon. I never promised you. Like, I vividly remember that moment and my mom washing dishes and doing that and going, oh, okay, I like that. And so the soundtrack of our lives. So why don't you guys introduce your name, because podcast form, they're not going to be able to see your lovely faces. So
My name is Nick and I play drums in the band Heartsuck Lions.
Hey guys, I'm Luke and I play bass.
I'm Michael and I play guitar.
I'm Steven and I sing and play guitar.
See, my first record of all time was probably, like, I bought with my own money, was like the Mighty Ducks 2 soundtrack or something like that. Nice. What was maybe? Can we switch out? There you go. What was maybe? Let's do this kind of quick. Where you guys, you go? I heard this song, and I wanted to be more than just a listener. Do you guys have that? Anyone?
I mean, personally, it was when I was about like 10. I was with my aunt and my uncle. They were a little older than me. And they popped in the first album by Rage Against the Machine.
Oh.
And so I first heard that, the opening. It's Check 2. It's Killing in the Name.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that song. And that was just like kind of transcendent for me, hearing rhythm established that way and like the aggression. So I was
that
like,
record is a life-changing record.
Yeah.
For
that,
sure.
That for me was like, whoa.
Yeah, but and then, you were about 10?
I was around 9 or 10, yeah.
Wow, wow. And that's heavy stuff.
It is. The world is a heavy place.
Some of those that work forces are the same that bar crosses. Some of those that work forces draw the same that bar crosses. Now you do what they told ya. 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 Some of those that work forces are the same that bar crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that bar crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that bar crosses.
How about you, man?
For me, it wasn't necessarily one record. Right. It was more so the experience of driving with my dad on our camping trips, hunting trips, and listening to classic rock like The Who, Boston, Doobie Brothers, and just hearing how talented those musicians are. And I was like, I want to be able to do that too, whatever it takes, whatever it looks like.
Yeah.
And I just started playing with friends and learning the bass in middle school.
When you think of that time, so what do you remember what your dad was driving?
It's probably like a Chevy 98 something.
Yeah.
Some Chevy truck.
Truck, a pickup truck. So you're sitting in the, you guys are from Long Beach, right?
Yeah.
So is this Long Beach still?
Yeah. Long Beach, we drive a couple hours outside of town.
And you'd be driving that thing. And what is a song in your nostalgic brain that comes to mind? Is there one?
Tom Petty, I Won't Back Down.
Oh, God. It's such a great record. It's such a great song. Greatest songwriter of all time.
Every time I hear that song and that album, it's flood back with good memories with my family and a couple of friends driving down the road. And I wanted to be able to create that experience for other people listening to my music.
Heck yeah, man. Did you ever see Tom Petty live?
I saw him a couple months before he died, yeah.
Same, man. Dude. Same tour. Any of you guys? No. You guys missed out. We went to church those nights.
Turn around.
Next, I try to think. I grew up listening to like blues, like,
okay,
like Stevie Ray Vaughan, all that kind of stuff. And then yeah, my mom was like a metalhead in the 80s. So like a mixture of both of those.
What a great combo.
Yeah. My parents were both rock stars. Well, so my family are all musicians.
That's
both
crazy.
My parents are musicians. And so I mean, for me, like music was just always part of like my life and my family. And
yeah.
But probably my like one song would be like More Than a Feeling by Boston.
You got a hair
that's
clap.
Like that's like the first time I heard like the story of like, you know, bands like you know coming up and like stuff like that was that record. And like I was just like, man, like I could do that as like an 8-year-old or something.
Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah, I actually grew up listening to old school rap and hip hop and reggae. My family was
okay,
big into reggae, so tons of Bob Marley all the time. And I remember I was going into sixth grade and my cousin was like, hey, you should learn how to play guitar. And I was like, all right, sweet. She's like, all right, this band's called The White Stripes. And I was like,
oh, so it was The White Stripes.
So White Stripes, well, I'd say Taking Back Sunday even more.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was definitely my stuff.
This is interesting to me because this is one of the things I love about... whenever I have these conversations with bands, is that we have Rage Against the Machine, Boston, or no, Tom Petty, Boston, White Stripes, Taking Back Sunday, and it made Hearts Like Lions, yeah, right? I mean, like, that's crazy. You may not listen to Hearts Like Lions and go, oh, there's that Tom Petty, there's very Tom Petty heavy-handed or Rage Against the Machine, but you might, now that they have this information, they go, well, that kind of... the way they did that was a little bit like that. And so that is amazing to me. Our mutual friends leased these. They one time came to my studio in Spring Hill, Tennessee, and and we were sitting there, and they were the most diverse out of the four of them, except for TJ and Tyler, who are both brothers, and grew up on like more of the early, I guess, Tooth and Nail or 2000s Tooth and Nail stuff. But then you had Chase, who was like Garth Brooks, 100%. And then you had Johnny, who was like me, like old school punk rock, like NoFX, Bad Religion, stuff like that. So it was just so funny to see that put together makes something kind of different. After that, what happened next in your journey? Like, what was the record that said, I'm going to start a band or I want to start performing?
I'd say the first CD I ever bought was Empire Strikes First by Bad Religion and then Dookie by Green Day. So those are the songs, those are the albums that influenced my drumming. That was Brooks Wackerman and Trey Cool.
Yeah.
And they're like really good punk drummers, so that got me playing music and then wanting to play in a band.
That's rad.
The first band that I really like fell in love with as my own that I found was Switchfoot, and I got heavy into Switchfoot all growing up into middle school, and listening to Nothing Is Sound, that record, I just had that on repeat for the whole summer after it came out, and that was so I can't find the right words for it, but it was, I mean, I guess inspiring, and inspired me to play
That's
bass. And
Switchfoot's such a good band to like grasp onto. I have to say the same thing about Bad Religion. Bad Religion for me is like, I was late to the game with Bad Religion a little bit. Like I think I heard like Stranger Than Fiction, that song, and I go, okay, all right. But I don't think I was old enough to understand what they were saying. I just thought it was catchy.
Yeah,
and then they led me down a weird road.
I think Tony Hawk.
Oh, Tony Hawk.
Tony Hawk Pro Skater Video Games did that to a lot of kids. Got you thinking about life.
That's right. Tony Hawk. And then there was another, I think, a snowboard video game called like 1080 or something like that.
Oh,
that had had Less Than Jake on it, I think. And that's how I found Less Than Jake. And I fell in love with ska music. So, I mean, that's crazy. Yeah.
Man.
You have one?
Yeah, so what was it? 5 Score and 7 Years Ago by Reliant K.
Okay.
Solid album. Like, from a songwriting perspective, just like across the board, solid songs.
Uh-huh.
But then also, like, anything by Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer, yeah.
I'm just
so
inspired.
So this tells me a lot about you. You sit there, you've bought plenty of albums, or at least listened to plenty of albums that just scores.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Tons of soundtracks.
I love that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Say what?
Tons of soundtracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually lied to you earlier. So the first CD I actually bought was Jurassic Park.
soundtrack or a score, because I didn't understand the difference between a soundtrack and a score. And my aunt gave me money and I ran to a Kmart. And I go, I really like Jurassic Park. That probably has some rad rock music on it. And I go, what the heck is this?
And then it opened your mind.
Yeah, and then I eventually loved it. But I for sure was not smart enough to realize a score and a soundtrack are two separate things. And I felt like an idiot.
So, Josh, did you see Jurassic Park before you listened to the score? Or?
Yes, I did. And I don't know what I was expecting. It wasn't like Malcolm, I'm sorry. It wasn't like Jeff Goldblum was like rocking Rage Against the Machine when the T-Rex was coming.
Yeah.
It was just
imagine them driving the Jeep chased
maybe
away
he
by
should've.
T-Rex.
I'd like to hear that now. I'd like to see them put a soundtrack to Jurassic
Park.
Someone
get on that.
Someone should definitely dub that.
Yeah.
I actually saw my little brother watching YouTube. It was footage from Jurassic Park with 3 Days Grace playing over the footage.
Oh, no.
And he thought it was the coolest thing. And he had to show me. It was cool.
All right, so we have Hans Zimmer and Reliant K with you. All right.
Yeah, I wouldn't actually say if it was a record. I think it would be more of the music scene for me, just going to shows with my parents. I mean, from like my first show being seeing Santana at the Hollywood Bowl to like going to Warped Tour and starting to go like all the Warped Tours and just see all the bands like you said, Less Than Jake, Taking Back Sunday, all those bands, All American Rejects, even to like Chiodos and bands like that.
Chiodos. That was another band I got late, but I always remember that one song. And the moment I say it, start doing it with my mouth, everyone's going, it's like that. Wah, 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 wah. Yeah. But that band was cool, man. And I like that. So you guys grew up in Long Beach, and I grew up in Southern Illinois. Very similar. Right?
Pretty much the same place.
I grew up in a smaller town that's like a couple hours north of LA. It's called San Luis Obispo.
Oh, okay.
There's only like 40,000 people there. It's like a little college town.
Okay, yeah. So you're probably closer to me than I'd like to admit.
Yes. I was a country boy.
Yeah. So the idea, this is what's cool, is the idea that when I was growing up, the music scene, I grew up about 3 hours south of here. And the music scene, we had nothing to do. We had cornfields and coal mines, and we dragged Maine. You know what dragging Maine is?
No. No.
You?
No.
Does anybody know what dragging Maine is? We got one or two. So it's just like you literally wasted gas.
Nice.
There was a stretch of Main Street that like every week of the night, we're like, we'll see you guys later. We just knew we would drive the same 2 miles in a circle on Main Street. People would set up on parking lots. You'd go and hang out and like, oh, we're done. And then we'd get back in the car and just drive that same circle over and over and listen to music and check out girls. That's what we were doing. And that was social networking before it was a thing. And so so because of that, we were like, oh, all these people here, we should set up like outside concerts or this or that. And because we had nothing else, I always get fascinated. You mentioned the music scene. Always get fascinated about what other music scenes around that time were like, because it seems like we were all kind of doing a similar thing with differences. Obviously, you weren't dragging Maine because you had a beach. We had Wren Lake.
We would drag sand.
Yeah, you drag sand.
I had a Jeep growing up, so we would just literally just go drive on the beach and do the same thing, drive back and forth like the same 2 miles.
Are you serious?
And then just be like, all right, I guess we'll go home now.
You think you're better than me? I'm just kidding.
Yes.
Reality catch it on prime time, story at 9. The whole world is
I love that, and I want to make sure we're good on time. Hold on a second. Oh, we're good. We're gravy. I know this times can go by pretty quickly, so let's explore that a little bit. Like, what were the local bands in your area that maybe never, or maybe they rose to fame, but that kind of set the bar for you as someone in the music scene? Did you have that?
Yeah, I'll go first. I mean, there was a band that kind of blew up called Night Riots, and they used to be called...
We played with them!
Oh, no way!
Yeah, right? Yeah, nobody was ever saying this. That's crazy.
Yeah, so they used to be called PK, like way back in the day.
Okay.
And they grew up, or they claimed San Luis Obispo. What? No, we didn't play with them.
They're blowing up right now, man. They're
great. They're big. But I remember like going to their first show as Night Riots in SLO, and it was just like packed out because everyone was so stoked. And I mean, they're a great band, and that was like
they were
for
great
sure.
Dudes. When we met them, we didn't know who they were, and it was before they're getting this. Their last year has been great. I assume maybe longer than that, but it's been about a year and a half or two since we played with them in St. Louis at the Blueberry Hill. And I was like, Night Riots, that's a rad name.
Yeah.
And they were just the nicest guys.
Yeah,
they're awesome.
They're cool guys. And that's literally the only band that came out of SLO that I know of. So
awesome. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid? Am I just stuck? I went to a shrink to analyze my dreams. She says it's like a sex that's bringing me down. I went to a whore. He said my life's a bore. Choke with my white and buzz, it's bringing her down. Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my
Long Beach is this weird thing where we're like right between Orange County and LA, so the big shows will either always go to those cities, but I feel that like there's like two big bands that came out along. Everybody knows Snoop Dogg and Sublime.
Right.
Other than that, the music scene in Long Beach is like really interesting.
Really?
If you were like a hardcore kid, you go to shows in LA and Orange County. There's not too many up until now. Like there's a lot of hardcore shows in Long Beach now, but for myself, I actually went to high school in a small town for a little while, and there was a raging hardcore scene there. So like a band called The Warriors was from out there, and that was like what I kind of looked to as the beginnings of playing shows, was all that DIY punk, like that's that whole vein of stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Is anybody keeping track of what all the yellow and the red, like which... We'll mix that up. I'm just kidding. Going back and forth, it's like a hopscotch.
In high school, I never really went out to the local music scene. Like I played with a...
You were in your pickup truck with your dad.
Yeah, that was my music scene.
That was my scene.
My scene was listening to music with friends in the car.
Yeah.
I didn't start going to shows until after high school or senior year so much. When I would just go to the bigger major venues. And you see bands like Mute Math that were starting to blow up around that time and get bigger. I never really had or saw the music scene locally in Long Beach really for what it was, which I'm sad I missed out on that.
I feel like it was completely different genres for, you had like bands like No Doubt that are from Long Beach, like you're saying, Sublime.
Yeah. Long Beach Dub All-Stars, weren't they from there too?
Yeah.
It's in the name.
Maybe I'm overcast, maybe all my luck's
really weird because Long Beach has like a heavy, heavy reggae influence in all the music scene. But there's also a lot of like, there's a town called Lakewood.
Yeah.
It's right next to Long Beach. And like, you know, that band This Wildlife?
Yeah.
They went to Lakewood High School. That's where I went to, we all went to high school except Michael.
That's cool.
There's a hardcore band called The Greeners. So like, there's a lot of punk and hardcore, like more so in the northern end. But like, hip hop, reggae was like pretty prevalent in the inner city.
That's rad. I mean, it's funny how we kind of just find our, that's a tribe mentality. We find our, yeah, I kind of like where this is going. I'm going to go here or here, you know? And then it takes the reason, well, did you have one you want to add to this? Okay, that
they
was
said it. All, yeah.
Something that happened in Southern Illinois that made us go, oh, we can do this. Like it's so funny. Me and my best friend, we were hanging out in Southern Illinois. He goes, hey, I think I'm going to start a band with these two other guys. And I go, we can do that? Like, I just didn't know we could. I knew I loved music. I knew I performed in church, but I didn't know it went more than that. I guess I just didn't realize it. They started a band, played their first show. A week later, I had already started a band and scheduled my first show because I was like, we can do this, you know? And then they got signed to Tooth & Nail, which you guys are signed to Tooth & Nail. And then I go, well, they played Cornerstone first. And we're like, we can do this? And so as always, I was like right one step behind them. Like,
it's funny because like, there's no really set right way to start doing, I guess, life in general, but music especially.
Yeah.
And so it's funny you say that because you're just like, yeah, let's just rent out the little VFW and book a show. And then that's a legitimate show. It's a legitimate way to make money. And you just don't know that you're doing it until you're an
adult. We found parking lots or empty rooms or churches that would let us just like, they didn't know any better not to let a bunch of like 150 kids go in there. Like we were going to clean up afterwards because we didn't know how to be decent people yet. And it was just rad. And you just made noise and you didn't worry about, you know, the money or the cost. You just thought, this is a cool thing we're doing. And I think that's kind of the same inner thread of anyone that's done it for any musician that's done it for any long time with mild or no success is say, well, this is a rad thing we get to do. And this is something I'll probably be doing even whenever no one cares. Just so happens that sometimes people care and it's awesome. I just ate a bug on podcast. That's exciting.
Talking about the music scene, we played a show in Odessa, Texas, and just West Texas, small town, and we're like, Odessa, okay, all right, well, let's see who's there. And ton of people showed up, and people who don't normally listen to us. And there was a couple other bands that weren't exactly our style, but we played it and we showed up, and people loved us. People were dancing, moving around. They're like, thanks for coming to Odessa and giving us something to do and a place to come and hang out. And that's what it's all about, just creating a space, creating a place for people to come and hang out and say, just enjoy their night off.
Raven Hill has made a living off going to small town America. I mean, because there's so much to do in Nashville, L.A., like there's so much to do, New York. But if you go to, I'm trying to think, Olney, Illinois, or if you go to even where I'm from, West Frankfort, Illinois, they got nothing. They've got nothing, and it's a big deal for to do that. Nashville, I lived in Nashville for 8 years, and everyone was like, oh, you're a Nashville band. It means you're legit, right? And I was like, well, no, there's a lot of bands there. But a zip code doesn't make you legit. But the idea that that's a great place to be from, it's hard to, like, get any. You could promote the hell out of a show, and 300 people show up. You could promote just as much, and 30 people show up.
Exactly.
And there's just too much going on. So,
it's just about competition. Like, if you're in LA, 100%. Nashville, New York, you know, like you said, there's 300 bands playing around there, but if you're playing these small towns just outside the suburbs, like an hour, 2 hours away, there's not as much going on, so people are going to come out and watch you play just because your music and your band.
Can I ask you guys a question? Let's get from, I've enjoyed this so far. Let's see if you ruin it. I'm just kidding. From this point, how did we start playing music together? Like, well, we're here, let's do this. What was your first band you guys started? Is this it, or is this, do you have other bands?
I had another band in high school that I played with for a little bit, but Steven and I started playing together senior year. We played a talent show for the senior class, and we covered Don't Stop Believing. Oh, and then after we graduated, we were like, let's just play together and see what comes out of that.
Yeah, Luke was in the band for one day. And then he was like, hey, he was in this other band already that was doing really well. And I was like, yeah, it makes sense. Like if that's like your main thing, go do that. Like, we'll bring someone else in.
Yeah.
Hearts Like Lions' first show is a battle of the bands against his band that we win.
Because it was a local band in Lakewood.
We did.
Hearts Like Lions won against my band, Foley.
And there was like a side bet. They were like, we get Luke if we win.
In our heads, I was like,
no, we used to be like a completely different band. Like, my wife now, who was my girlfriend at the time, was in the band, and she sang and I sang. So we had like two lead singers, completely different style. And then kind of when that like kind of stopped, Nick and I met each other, and we had like three shows left that our previous drummer was just like, you know what, I'm just going to quit. But he did like this weird thing where he posted on Facebook and quit. And so we all saw it from Facebook. We're like, wait, what?
Oh no.
And then
I feel bad for every girl he ever broke up with.
And so randomly he was just like, I asked Nick like maybe like 2 days before we had shows. I was like, hey, do you want to fill in? He was like, yeah. And I was like, hey, do you want to just be our drummer? He was like, yeah. So like
this escalated very quickly in Nick's eyes. He's like, you want to fill in? Yeah, sure. You want to be our drummer?
I remember like day before the show, him and I practiced for like 6 hours straight and then played the show the next day. And then
learning half a dozen songs 2 days before the show was a future of mine that I never knew I was signing up for as a drummer.
100%. Yeah. Drummers.
Yeah.
That is a drummer thing.
That's some real anxiety right there.
A good drummer is so hard to find, and is especially in my experience, is in 8 different bands.
There was a point where I was in Hearts Like Lions and like 2 or 3 other hardcore bands. Yeah.
And you're like, you guys are my main thing, but these other things, they pay money or this or that. There are those situations. I'm not saying that's your situation.
Might be.
But there's so many. Raven Hill, when we first started, not that this is about Raven Hill, but Raven, when we first started, I didn't think it was going to go anywhere. I thought, oh, I've always wanted to do soul music and rock, but why would anybody want to hear a white guy sing that? And then it took off. And so, but at the time I was like, I'll get 2 drummers, 2 bass players, 3 guitars, piano player, and then whoever can play will play. In the first show, both drummers like, yeah, we'd love to do it. And I was like, I don't care, let's do it. So we became known as a two drummer band. And so at any given time, you could see us with two drummers. All that to say, it has been a benefit to have like five drummers know Raven Hill stuff, because yeah. Others go, this is fun. This church is paying a lot of money. I need to do that. I can't be gone for 2 months. So. Yeah, so you were in a band before Hearts Like Lions. What was the name of that band?
That was called Foley. It was just the middle name of my friend who played pianos.
And
he
Foley?
Had a Foley, yeah. He had a great voice, amazing voice for a 16-year-old boy. And and everyone told him that.
I'm trying to not say anything bad, but...
But, yeah, so he was going off just his voice and his piano skills and just grabbed whoever was around him to fill in for the band. Mm-hmm. And Hearts Like Lions started to get more success, and then he eventually was like, sorry guys, I'm going solo, have fun
going solo
with your own musical career.
I'm taking a 16-year-old voice with me.
Yes. And around that same time, Hearts Like Lions had the drummer dropped out and Ariel stopped playing, and that was right when Nick joined, and I've been with Hearts Like Lions since.
Right on. So, Hearts Like Lions, your first band?
No, I was playing in a couple hardcore bands before Hearts
Right
Like
on.
Lions. That was the main gig for me.
Cool. And what was your influence in those hardcore bands?
He's
like, I'm done talking.
I would say came up in the vein of like Comeback Kid and Terror. Like, those were the shows I was going to.
My Denzel Washington came out there a little bit.
Around the time I joined Hearts Like Lions, playing for a band called Dynasty that was a hardcore band on Face Down Records. So I got to like do Cornerstone 2011 and then do like Face Down Fest a couple times. So I got introduced to this whole world pretty early on.
Cool.
And then before Hearts Like Lions really did much after that, yeah.
Awesome. What year did Hearts Like Lions start?
2011.
Okay, cool. So just give me an idea of timeline we're at here.
And then as I said before, I lived in San Luis, which is like 4 hours north, completely disconnected from these guys. Mm-hmm. And I grew up playing bands in high school and solo music and stuff like that. I did like singer-songwriter stuff for a while.
Yeah, you did.
And I had this band in high school that was called Tangerine Man. And it was a joke.
Boy, that is such a high school name.
It was a joke jazz band.
Yes. Yes.
It was called Tangerine Man.
Wow, mine was awesome. Local Aliens.
Nice.
Yeah. That's my bad band name.
But yeah, I was in that band. I was in another band that we never could decide on a name, but it was like kind of same thing, alternative rock. Yeah. And then I ended up playing solo music for a while and then met Steven's wife, who he wasn't married to at the time, but she was working at a church that I was at. Found out about these guys through her. And then they were on tour with Foreign Sons, homies of ours. And then I saw that they were passing through like San Luis area. So I asked them if they wanted to play a show and like set up a show for them. And then I opened for them. And then that night they asked me if I wanted to join because they needed a guitar player. But funny story, that same night.
On the spot. Must have been a good set.
It was a great show.
Most impressive.
It was funny though, because that same night there was a friend of my parents who happened to be in town, came to the show. He was like a producer for Sony and Warner Brothers and stuff. And he was like trying to get me to come out to his studio in LA. So I was like, I remember that night having like his business card in my hand and like Hearts Like Lions in my car radio, just being like,
This is the greatest night ever.
Yeah. But then I was like at a crossroads because I was like, do I want to like be in this band with these awesome dudes that I've been hanging out with and like getting to know? Or do I want to, become
a
pop star and tour with Ed Sheeran?
Yes.
So I chose the rock
Sheeran
band.
Ed Sheeran, right? This you guys are finding out now.
Yeah.
He posted on Facebook. Yeah.
His dad actually had dinner with Ed Sheeran at
NAMM. 5 years ago. I don't know why you guys
didn't
see it.
Yeah, his dad knows Ed Sheeran.
Oh yeah, my dad met Ed Sheeran at NAMM show.
It was ridiculous.
Randomly.
That's awesome.
It was great. He was at the Lowell guitar booth because Ed Sheeran has like a signature guitar with them.
Right.
And my parents ended up going to dinner with like the Lowell family and all of them, and Ed Sheeran was just at the table eating dinner with them.
Because he eats like the rest of us.
Yeah. His little
I just saw the
food movie
yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And he's in it a lot.
Yeah. He wrote it, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
I think he wrote
it.
I think he wrote the movie.
Oh,
that
would explain a lot.
Yeah.
Because I go, man, I don't want to ruin anything for you, but the balls on that guy to play the role he did as himself is pretty interesting. You should watch it. I think it's great.
Interesting. So, yeah, that's kind of how I joined this band. And then
that's great.
That was in 2014, 2015. Was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I was 17.
So. Came out with an EP that year, right? The 2014. Were you on that?
No, not yet.
Oh, interesting. I don't know. I don't.
No, literally, it was just
anything.
Me and Steven. We were the only ones that did
that
whole thing.
Yeah, I ruined the band.
Okay. All right, and then you guys, the same kind of story, right? No.
Yeah, I started it. Yeah,
that's right, with him.
No.
That's rad. So, 2014. What was the name of that EP?
These hands.
Okay.
Gonna catch these
wait,
hands.
Yeah, wait. Yeah. These hands. Everybody, jazz hands. You guys came out with that. And then what happened next? You finally got the four of you together after you did
what
this
was it?
Record.
Yeah, I think it was...
So right before I joined the band was when Tooth & Nail found them and signed them.
Right on.
And that was 2014, right?
Yeah, because we had self-released the record. It's funny, we were making the record and Nick and I were talking. We're like, all right, like we should send it to some record labels that we want. And the producer we were working with, he was like, hey, just so you know, like usually like bands on their first EPs, like no one ever wants to touch them or anything like that. So we were just like, all right, we won't do it. So we didn't send it to anybody. We released it. We got like an early release through HM Magazine. Is HM Magazine still a thing?
I think so, but okay. Mostly digital.
Yeah. And so we did a pre-release of them, and then we got hit up by Tooth & Nail and In Vogue Records. And then we went with it. Said no to Tooth & Nail. We don't
need
a label. You
and Raven Hill both.
And then he said, do you know who we are? That's what he literally said on the phone. Not gonna lie. And I was like, man. All right, talk. Because I want to know what you're...
Was it Brandon?
It was Adam. Adam Scatullo.
Adam Scatullo.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Papa Scat.
I was like Connor. Freaking out when I found out that they got signed, because I grew up listening to all those Tooth & Nail bands.
Yeah, yeah. Or
most of the Tooth & Nail bands.
I think everybody here did.
Yeah, that's literally what Audio Feed is founded
right
on.
Now.
I literally never listened to any Tooth & Nail bands whatsoever at all.
I'm going to need you to leave.
Anything. They even made fun of us on the Bad Christian podcast because Matt and Toby were asking me, like, they're like, oh, what'd you grow up listening to? They're like, did you listen to Pedro the Lion? Did you listen to, they're saying a bunch of different bands.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're like, what'd you listen to? And I was like, Taking Back Sunday. And they're like, that's not what you sound like.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of my favorite things about this band is when people come up and tell us like all these big bands that we should know, and they're like, "Oh, you sound like this," and we just have no.
We don't know.
We don't know.
We sound like them.
Thank you. But
funny story is, we had opened up for a band called Motion City Soundtrack, and the lead singer and I were talking, and this little old lady came up and goes to him, and says, "You guys are great," and then looks at me and goes, "Sounds like you're trying to be Bear." I go, I don't know who that is, but awesome. And she goes, it's a lead singer, Need to Breathe. And I go, okay, I'll go check them out. But didn't, because I was so mad at that lady for telling me who I was trying to sound like, that I put it off for a long time. And we ended up becoming great friends with those guys. But I literally told them to their face, I was like, I didn't listen to you guys at a protest for such a long time. But I can get it. If people tell you who you sound like, you kind of almost don't want to go that route, because if you're already kind of seeing influences and stuff like that, you definitely don't want to lean into that. You definitely want to keep your identity.
Yeah, yeah. There's something to be said about like all artists copy other artists. They just put their own twist
blenders.
On it. Yeah. But like hearing bands are like, oh, you sound just like these people. Like, that's cool that we can like grab those listeners and their audience. But at the same time, we're trying to create our own art, put our own twist and our own personality on it too. So it kind of, when someone says that, you're like, all right, listen to that and see and hear what they're making. And you're like, all right, I'm not going to try and do that and stand out a little bit more.
Seeing these four walks of life come to this to become Hearts Like Lions, that to me shows you that like we are blenders. Like you have, as individuals and together, like the way you drum and the way you play bass and guitar and sing, and that's all going to make Hearts Like Lions like nothing else, almost like a fingerprint. Go ahead. Unless you're being intentionally ripping off, but oh, there's only one Greta Van Fleet, right?
I was literally just gonna talk about Greta Van Fleet. I think we're in like this weird spot. I don't know if all the, I feel like the like rock star era is like done. Like I feel Foo Fighters
honestly,
are the last of that vein.
If you listen
I
to any
Greta
of these
Van Fleet on the rig.
Dude, Greta Van Fleet's great.
I
great
like them. I don't know. No, hey.
We had
I feel like we're just
to
gonna
see
be
them play
like, in a good way, recycling all the old classics now.
I do
and
not.
It's okay. It's okay.
I do not. I mean, I like them. They can't be mad at us saying.
I don't think they are.
Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin called
right?
They want their respect.
Right. We don't have Led Zeppelin. I'm okay with there being a Greta Van Fleet.
I don't think they're mad about it. I think they
I
know.
Don't think, I think they'd be foolish to not know.
Yeah. But I will say, like, live performance, killer. Yeah? They were so good.
I haven't seen them live yet. I will, though. I will.
I will say this. When I was first heard them, I was driving in the car listening to the radio, and one of their songs was on, and I was like, this sounds exactly like Led Zeppelin. I haven't heard this song by Led Zeppelin before. And I like pulled up my phone, like, Siri, what band is this? Listen's like, oh, it's Greta Van Fleet. I was like, what?
Siri said, oh, bro, it's Greta Van Fleet, bro.
Till the front door closes, leaving me to fight back all these things that I've been feeling like a lost cause. When I know you're trying hard to make me right, and I'm holding out my hand to you, but you slip right.
I like the idea of diving in and finding out that you guys were Tooth and Nail kids, right? And you were not.
I was.
You were not either?
I really didn't listen to a lot of Tooth bands.
You were the only one. I haven't been listening this entire podcast, guys.
No, I'm probably more similar to you. I grew up on the Epitaph bands.
Oh, right on.
And Green Day and hardcore punk.
That was, I did.
And gangster rap.
I did mostly the music of Carmen, the contemporary Christian singer. And then, yeah, you're welcome. And then
I got the most cheers of this whole podcast.
Yeah. And then Tooth and Nail. And then I went to the Epitaph, Fat Records, and then Vagrant and all that stuff. So now you're together and you come out with the record in 2017, is that right?
Yeah.
And what is that called?
If I Never Speak Again.
If I Never Speak Again. And then that's your first full length on Tooth and Nail, right?
Correct.
Yeah. All right. And who'd you guys do that with?
Same guy, Drew Owens.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And what to dive into that process, because we got about 20 minutes before we need to wrap up. Into that process a little bit, what we could talk about, stories about like, oh, well, we got this tone from this and this and this. And we need much longer time to do that. And I didn't mean to talk like a Muppet there. But, but I would like to know what was the inspiration behind that record, and were there any cool stories in the process and all that stuff that you would think we would like to know?
I think we were touring a lot before we went into the studio. We didn't have much time to write a record, but we were listening to a lot of Bad Sons, a band called.
Oh, okay, that band's rad,
dude. I love that band, and a lot of like From Indian Lakes, like and Taking Back Sunday type stuff. Still, you can hear that in the record. But honestly, and we kind of talk about this a lot because we've been writing a new one, and we're actually putting a lot of demoing and like doing that whole process beforehand. Yeah. We didn't go into the studio with any demos, and we had 12 skeleton songs.
How much time did you spend in the studio?
5 weeks. First week was pre-pro. And then I think I had maybe a chorus done for one song, but all the songs were done completely musically. And then the last week, just banged out all the vocals. And everything was in studio.
You gave yourself time to create in the studio. Now you're doing most of the I'm sure there'll be more creation that happens in the studio once you get in there, but you're giving your more of like, I guess, a late plan with this new one, right?
Yeah, it definitely is taking the stress out of the situation. The last process felt like there was just so much pressure to make those songs that we had work, you know, like the just 12 songs to form like a 10 song album and like only scrap two. And I mean, like, it's amazing that we pulled it off. Like, and I'm glad that now we have so much more material to pull from and just like take our time figuring out what we want to do, you know?
I'm optimistic by nature, but I feel like, and I could be wrong, you gave yourself 5 weeks in the studio to get through If I Never Speak Again. Is that right? There will still be things that pop up on this next record that you'll be like stressed or whatever. But at least the structure of the song will be there. yeah, like, this is what we agreed on. But I think regardless of what you put yourself in, I think we sometimes as artists don't give ourselves credit for being able to get a thing done. And sometimes those limitations are great for us.
And as creatives, artists, like most of us are perfectionists, and the constant tweaking at the end, getting the bulk of the art done, the constant tweaking kind of shapes it and can pull it away from what it was originally meant to be. And so at some point you got to put a deadline on it, because there's always going to be something that you wish you could change, a lyric you could have switched, you know, a chord that you could have changed.
Speech from a producer one time, and he said to just simplify it until it sounds like a Drake song, and then you're done.
And insert Drake song here. So that record in 2017, like anything that predominant that you were trying to say in that, or are you just trying to you. There were 3 years in between that record and your EP.
Yeah, so we actually even finished recording the record. The record was done in like January 2016, and we waited a whole year to put it out.
January 2016?
Yeah. We had like all the mixes and masters probably by like April or May, and then held on to it until January.
So was that your decision or Tooth & Nails?
Tooth & Nails.
Okay.
I think it had to be both. But yeah, we originally wanted to put it out in like October, but then they've just been signing a bunch of bands.
I have experience with a lot of friends that are on Tooth & Nail, so yeah. I get that. they're, I mean, they've obviously put out way more records than all of us combined. So they usually know best when to put out a record. But on the artist side, that's so frustrating.
Yeah, it was a lot of, like, you know, figuring out the marketing and all that kind of stuff.
Right, right.
Wanting to have music videos and things like that for
totally.
Releasing, which we didn't have, but.
I feel it in my bones. A wolf's got a howl, but I don't howl no more. I feel it in my heart. And I feel it in my soul. A wolf's got a howl, but I don't howl. I got the strength to hell or high. I got the love to get me by. But oh Lord, don't let me die alone.
When you're finally, when you finally release the thing and you let it go, you go, all right, let's put it out, and then you gotta wait a year. That's like whenever we did our full-length record and we were talking to Tooth & Nail, we were about to put it out ourselves, and they're like, oh, can you hold off while we negotiate and talk and all that stuff? And we were like, yeah, I guess so. And so we'd wait 4 or 5 months, and then so it ended up being, after all those several labels, it ended up being like a year, and we had been sitting on it forever. And the only people that had it were the people that kickstarted, we gave away in the Kickstarter.
Yeah, so it's crazy because you, in your mind, like as your band, you've played these songs and listened to them for a year long, and then you put it out and you're like, you kind of in a sense almost over listening to it all the time.
Yeah, let's start the next record, writing the next record, my next story, yeah.
But then you have to find new ways to get, it's cool you end up finding new ways to get stoked on it because there's all these listeners that it's getting put out to, or, I mean, even now, there's people who, we'll only hear Hearts Like Lions today and have never heard any of our songs.
Right.
And those are from, you know, from 2017 that we're still playing today, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think hearing from like people that, you know, find our music and stuff, hearing the way that they relate to it, for me at least, is like how to keep it interesting for myself. Like, you know, some people will be like, oh, this song, like, you know, makes me feel like this or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, I never even thought about it that way.
Yeah. It means a lot whenever someone comes up and says, it gives it new life for sure. It makes you, if you've taken it out of the set, maybe throwing it back into the set or whatever.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
So you are currently demoing this new one. Are you going to work with the same producer?
No, we're going to try to just explore more options this time.
Right.
Kind of more than rather just pick one. We have a whole list of like at least maybe about 5 to 10 producers that we've been in touch with. So.
Right on. You got an ETA? Probably not.
No, not yet.
That's okay. Waiting on the good old budget.
Yeah, man. I got it. what do you, well, first off, I mean, we got a few more minutes, but where can they find you? online. I mean, Hearts Like Lions.
Yeah, Facebook,
Google that,
Instagram,
guys, if you've heard of the internet.
Google, Spotify, Apple Music. Yeah.
Is there anything else coming down the pike? Are you doing a lot of touring? Or
this
or
is kind of our
riding time?
Last big show. We're doing one more show in San Jose in August, but we're just looking at planning some more riding retreats and demoing out as many things as we can, just to kind of like get the creativity going again. Yeah.
You want
I think we
want
to totally. We'd like want to redo the whole thing from the ground up. That's what why we've been laying low. We've been laying pretty low this past year or so. We've done a couple little tours, but for the most part, like really wanting to hone in on creating a new experience for people. Which like when you start a band, you don't think about that, but now we're all adults and we think about everything too much, or I do at least. And so you like. We just want to redo the whole thing. So
you can only really release this record once. So why not do it the way you want to do it, the right way first?
And you learn a lot from doing it. There's a lot of things I wish we could have changed with the last couple releases. So looking forward to like really getting on the ground running with it and then just like pushing that momentum as far as we can.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me on this thing. And I can't wait to see you live. I've never seen you live. I listened to your music yesterday for the first time because Tyler said, hey, you should talk to these guys. These guys are rad. Can you say something horrible about Tyler before we go? No?
There is nothing horrible about Tyler.
Yeah, literally nothing. Literally, when we saw Tyler in Texas, Nick was like, I need to get some new shoes. And Tyler literally takes his shoes off his feet, gives them to Nick. So Nick's wearing Tyler's shoes. And if you go see Tyler right now, Tyler's wearing Nick's old beat-up Vans.
That is amazing.
Tyler is the sweetest boy.
He really is. That's why I want you to say something bad, because I can't think of anything.
Hey, sorry we're missing your set right now to talk.
Yeah, we are missing his set.
That's on us, though.
If I could fart in your face and give you pink eye, I would. That's the worst thing I'll say.
He's done that?
No, I'm going to probably do that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good. All right, well, thank you guys for listening to us. Give Hearts Like Lions a round of applause for being able to do this. And go check them out at 5:15.
Thanks for having us.
Say what?
I said thanks for having us.
Oh, of course. Next time you're in Dallas or Nashville, we'll sit down and we go dive even deeper. Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Brooklyn's in a blackout, blackout, and you still find a way to shine.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. That was my interview with Hearts Like Lions at Audio Feed 2019. They have an EP that came out in 2014 called These Hands, and a full-length album that came out in Tooth & Nail Records, If I Never Speak Again. You guys should totally go check those out. Some of the songs are played on this podcast. Go support all the bands that were played. Some of them you probably already do. And I hope we shared some music that perked your ears up. And you can go check out in the show notes who played what, and it's all in order. Go follow Honey Gold Records. Go follow Hearts Like Lions on all social medias. Go follow all the bands on Honey Gold Records and tune into The Hive. Tell people about us, please. We love doing this and we love building this community. Long live the Brotherhood. Long live The Hive.
You're listening to a Honey Gold Records production. For this podcast and others like it, go to www.honeygoldrecords.com.